Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to episode 94 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and I am back in the year 2020 with my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And joining us on the couch is producer Jim Viscardi.
I was really hoping for like a Barbara Walters joke.
Oh, no, I don't have any of those. I don't have any of those. I'm too old. I can barely make it up through those New Year's like lead-in specials anymore. But we're back in 2020, but we're not done with all the business of 2019 yet.
Mm-mm.
We've got some stuff to clean up. We've been off for a while. We're happy to be back. We hope you guys had as much fun dodging family and friends around the holidays as we did. But it's time to get back to the business at hand here at Comic Book Nation. First of all, thank you all who have been listening to our Rise of Skywalker very first phone drop equipment failure in the middle of the show. Jim Viscardi.
No one heard it. Only the people on the video saw it.
Go ahead, pick it up now.
I don't need to pick
it
up.
People listening don't need
it. The elephant is in the room.
Just go get it. Get your phone off the floor.
Don't. Oh, really?
And you kick over the table, the pops.
Jeez. It's a great way to start the new year.
Yeah, we're starting the new year off great. Right. I mean, but I've had a lot of ominous like omens already in the new year, so like, here we are. But as I said, we're not done with 2019 yet. Thank you to all of you who've been listening to our Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker bonus episode, which has quickly become our most downloaded episode by an insane degree, by 2 times the amount of our former best, which is good, I guess, for growth this show has had.
There you go.
Or you guys just really like our opinion on Star Wars, which either way is pretty miraculous. You know, that was my Christmas miracle. But we're not done talking yet because, of course, The Rise of Skywalker and everything happening around it is not done yet. And today we have to kind of jump into an update because, yes, already the release, the JJ cut movement is on and popping and it is going down. And we're going to talk about all of that. We're also going to talk about the new trailer for A Quiet Place 2, the sequel to one of the more successful new horror franchises that's come out recently. And, of course, we got to talk about The Witcher. We had a review from Matt and Mr. Roland Bishop, our games editor, before we left here. But now that we've all had a chance to take the holiday and really take in The Witcher, the show has become, in terms of Netflix success, pretty successful. Yeah. There's memes everywhere, quotes
Netflix
everywhere.
It's getting
there. But there's also been some controversy about some of the more unique choices for the show. So we're going to do that full spoilers Netflix discussion that we got to kind of wait until you guys binge through to discuss. And we're going to give you guys a preview of 2020, all the TV shows, movies, games, comics, things that we are going to be excited to be talking to you about this year. So,
are we going to talk about The Mandalorian at all, too?
Is that in the Star Wars section? I was kind of on the fence, but we are talking about Star Wars, so we'll throw it in there because
all right.
I thought it was too much time had passed since the end of the show, since we've been on.
The end of the show?
Yeah.
The end of the show happened.
You could have thrown it in for your looking forward to stuff in 2020 thing.
Yeah, we'll get to it. All right. Mando is going to be on our radar, so we'll be talking about it. All right, that'll do it. Let's start at the top. As I said, this Rise of Skywalker discussion is not over, not Mm-mm. by a long shot. The movie has come out. People have had their opinions. This has been easily, Megan Peters, Queen of Anime, did an excellent article on comicbook.com Star Wars about how Rise of Skywalker very much is the second most divisive, mm-hmm. Film in the entire Star Wars franchise, right behind the one that preceded it, The Last Jedi. So that whole thing has gone down. Yeah, but it's still been a box office smash.
Yeah, it's so funny because in that being the most divisive, The Last Jedi had a very high critic score and a very low audience score, and Rise of Skywalker is the exact opposite, where it has a low-ish critic score and a very high audience.
Hey, I've been saying all along, it's the people who are going to these premieres, those critics that are the problem, Brandon Davis. But I'm just kidding. BD, I hope you're having a great new year, buddy.
He didn't go to Last Jedi.
No, I mean, I know. Oh, wait, he didn't?
I did.
That's right. Well, there you go. Now we know why that whole thing fell apart. All right. Well, we're doing some fact
finding. So curious,
finding.
What was Force Awakens as far as scores? As far as
it was pretty, it was pretty even.
That was like the only last time we were all together about Star Wars okay. at all.
Well, that's what everyone was excited for. Yeah. It was the first Star Wars movie in 10 years. Like, yeah,
last time we'd all be together again on Star Wars or pretty much anything culturally at all.
Look, but, 4 years ago is a long time.
Yeah, to say the least. But so where is the conversation about Rise of Skywalker now? Well, over the course, after the first and within the second week of release, of course, people have begun to dissect the movie.
The conspiracy
details and conspiracy theories has popped up on social media and the internet, over in Reddit threads. And basically what this, the whole main thrust of this is that so-called insiders who were close to production on Rise of Skywalker allegedly claim that the movie was kind of hacked up and changed by Disney to the point where they basically took J.J. Abrams hostage or didn't even tell him certain things that were going to be changed. And there was a whole, there's a whole Reddit thread of lists of things that would have been different in The Rise of Skywalker, from the ending to the relationships. Those are two of the biggest points that people have really latched onto, to epic cameo sequence that would have been in the film. And this has caused people to think that, of course, in our culture these days for these big blockbuster franchise films, now people are claiming this isn't the version, the true version of Rise of Skywalker, that J.J. Abrams must have some cut of his original version of the film, which is clocked in around 3 hours.
Yeah, well, I think that, so like that 3 hours mark, I think, is from what other people have said, is J.J.'s assembly cut.
Yeah. And I would figure that would be true. The assembly cut. If you're not familiar with the term, the assembly cut is basically like a rough cut of the film that a director puts together with everything they have in it before it gets trimmed down to a theatrical cut. Which is the studio coming back and saying, can you get this down to 2 hours so we can have X amount of showings, make X amount of money, and all the calculations that go into it. So the filmmaker tells the story he or she wants to tell, or the story he or she can actually get on film. Studio comes in, they trim it down to the manageable movie time that you see. So his assembly cut was said to be 3 hours, but now that's conflated with if this is the true cut of Rise of Skywalker, all that stuff. So you guys know the drill about this because you were assumedly listening to this show in 2019 and heard the multiple sagas of the Justice League Snyder cut, which is also still ongoing. But this new JJ cut of Star Wars Rise of Skywalker is now officially a thing, because as of today, it was a top trending topic on Twitter, and now it's slowly pulling people in like, what's this JJ cut? And here we go.
Well, and it also doesn't help that the film editor for the movie has gone out and said that they had 3 months less than The Force Awakens to edit Rise of Skywalker. So much so that the editor was on set with JJ literally editing the movie as he was finishing shots. And it's so crazy because one of the big conspiracy things that had popped up over the last week or so was the final scene in the movie.
Yeah, hold on. Spoilers.
There's going to be spoilers
from this point of Rise of Skywalker. Yes. Skip 3 minutes or so if you don't want to hear them.
Yes.
But yeah, it's spoiler time because there's no way to talk about this without spoilers. Yep.
So one of the big conspiracy theories was at the end of the movie when Rey is looking up on Tatooine at the two suns, that shot was an identical shot of the I forget the name of the desert planet they were on where the jet troopers come at them.
Navarro.
Yeah. When they're on Navarro, saying that it was just a recycled shot because of the editing crunch that they had to get through. One of our guys, Patrick Cavanaugh, one of our head Star Wars writers, got to talk to the editor about that shot, and she said it's not a recycled shot, but yes, that shot was shot when we were filming the Navarro scenes, but we had already intended to use that as the end scene of the movie being on Tatooine. So while yes, the Star Wars fans were right in noticing a lot of very, you know, the similarities, but that was intentional and filmed for two very different purposes.
Hats,
so no tinfoil hats.
That's just standard film practice. Yeah.
Right.
If you're in a movie, and let's just explain, if you're in a movie that's going to be jumping locations, any blockbuster movie, and you, Star Wars has, this one is like on an ice planet, a jungle planet, a water planet, and a desert
it's
planet.
Donkey Kong.
Yeah. So like when you are going to be in, if you have two different desert planets, say Navarro and Tatooine, then as a practical matter in production, yes, you film both scenes while you are in the desert location and climate, and you film both locations and everything that's needed for both. So this isn't like, this is not at all uncommon in movies. But that was one thing. The other thing was Oscar Isaac kind of hinting that there was, that JJ was going to maybe lean more into this Finn Poe, like, you know, LGBTQ relationship, which has been like a big fan favorite ship throughout this whole Star Wars sequel trilogy. But Disney kind of acts that is the rumor. And that's also echoed in this. There's another one about Ben Solo maybe having lived at the end instead of dying.
What about a conversation having happened between Rey and Kylo during that scene?
A conversation with Rey and Finn about him being force sensitive and how he actually has to use the power in the movie during that starship with him and the new character, whatever her name is.
Probably what the thing he was trying to tell her and that never got resolved.
Yeah, well, that was confirmed.
Okay,
That what he was going to tell her was that he was force sensitive, which is something that had been at play since the very beginning of the sequel trilogy for why he was able to wake himself up from his stormtrooper programming and do that whole thing. And that he would have needed in that battle and with the Star Destroyers to use it to actually move something with his mind, like, and actually access powers of the Force. And the list goes on and on. I can, like, the Reddit thread is pretty thorough about going through. And for some people, that's given it a lot of credit because they think that, like, the level of detail that's being explained here kind of authenticates it. But there's no way to verify this right now because, again, this is all from an inside source on the internet, threads, who allegedly says. So you just got to take it with a grain of salt. But the important thing is how this is affecting the fandom and what the reaction has been, because I've been kind of monitoring what's going on with Rise of Skywalker. And, yeah, there are a lot of people who are upset about this film. Not just because it's like Last Jedi or not like Last Jedi, but because of the actual decisions that are made. There's a whole Kylo Ren, Ben Solo camp of fans that are just so broken up about how this ended. There's whole things about Rey and taking on the Skywalker name. But people feel some kind of way. And I feel like it's just becoming this weird trend that when we see a movie we don't like it used to be that you had the fantasy of a movie you in your head going in, preconceived notions, then you came out, and if you saw something you didn't like, then you went and talked to your friends about, like, oh, I wish it had been this, that, or the other. But now we've gotten to the point where people think there's, like, this level of control where you can start petitions and, you know, social media trends and somehow bully studios into revealing the quote-unquote real version.
I mean, you could
which
say,
is a.k.a. the version you wanted or preferred to see.
Yeah, you could say entitled. I mean, right? There's a general feeling of
I mean, it seems to come up with every big movie since Justice League.
And now it's coming up with games and it's coming up with TV. Like, it's everywhere now. Like, you can't get it around.
Yeah, and it's like, but it, like, ever since Justice League, it's like Avengers Endgame comes out.
Yeah.
And then even that movie that, like, few people had a problem with, made a ton of money, most profitable, like, highest grossing movie in the world. And people are still like, what about that Russo brothers cut? And it took them to coming out and just being like, no. Like, we put up everything we shot.
It was already
we don't have anything.
Come look.
Here's a vlog tour of our closet. There is no reels of film in here.
It was, like, too long to begin with.
And I think also too, because JJ has also said that he has a bunch of deleted scenes too that, you know, inevitably make Blu-ray releases and things like that.
Yeah.
Where the difference is on the, like, in Avengers Endgame, like, there were very, very few deleted scenes that made it to that. There may have been a handful. Now, there was a bunch of stuff that was in the script that never got filmed, but that's the whole, that's
totally
different.
Well, in every single sequence we've seen from Endgame post, everyone went, yeah, okay, we for the most part, the majority of people were like, we're good that didn't really need to make
like
it
that,
in
there. That post
I will be curious if that's the case when
Rise comes out
and you see all the scenes.
Well, I wonder now
if, like, Disney's going to hold some of them back because they don't.
Well, this is the other side of this, because I've, like I said, I've been following everything about this movie on social media since we've been on break, and you know, I don't really take breaks. So instead of actively doing stuff, I've just been reading social media and, like, seeing what's going on with this film. And it just seems like not only do I feel like there's a little bit more weight to this one because of the level of detail that's in it, and it collects like various news things people said, you know, have said or things hinted at. Like Oscar Isaac actually did hint at there may have been like a Finn Poe of Disney overlords, and I think were his words, didn't put the kibosh on it. Finn or John Boyega has barely been restrained in saying like F what happened to Finn in these movies. Kelly Marie Tran has just been laughing off. Like, if you go through their entire threads of people who have compiled all the interviews, all these directors, like JJ and all the stars of Rise of Skywalker have done, and to highlight the clear points where it looks like they're just coming up against their media training so hard. Like, when Kelly Marie Tran asks, what do you think about Rose's arc in this film? And she just bursts out laughing. And it's just like, yeah.
Which was a great or Oscar, by the way.
Or there's an entire thread just to Oscar Isaac just trying to hold, like,
well, on top
hide
of the fact
disdain.
That he just looks so, oh yeah, he's so over this press tour. And
yeah. Just but even franchise. But even just particularly this film, like, when asked, like, how is this film? And he's just like, ugh. And, like, all of them, Daisy Ridley, like, all of them seem pretty kind of short. JJ's been kind of doing verbal gymnastics in the press for weeks now.
But JJ's gone completely off the radar since the movie came out. It's all been Chris Terrio taking all the bullets.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, JJ's like, I'm out.
Yeah, he's like that gift where the dude puts up the peace sign and fades out.
You take him. And boy, ugh.
And it's going to be interesting to see, like, Zack Snyder, once these contracts are up and the obligations are up and the home release is out and all the money's tallied, like, what J.J. Abrams says then is going to be very interesting because he is a consummate company man. Mm-hmm. And so it's not surprising if he's been
ducking. And he's not stupid. He wants to work with Disney. And
yeah,
he wants that Disney money.
He wants those bidding wars. He wants those bidding wars to continue.
He's not going
to
screw it over.
Oh, I forgot about that part. There's this. So the whole thing about this conspiracy theory about Disney mucking with J.J.'s film, where it goes full, I mean, tinfoil sombrero, not even hat, full sombrero. People saying that Disney did this to ruin JJ's reputation.
Wow.
So that, like, he's not attractive and his bad robot imprint isn't as attractive to studios like Warner Brothers and things like that. So they can lower his market value to hold on to him, essentially, and get him to do more stuff for them.
That's the dumbest thing.
Yeah,
exactly. Dumbest thing I've ever heard.
This is where we are. This is
I'm
peak,
so sorry.
This is peak, like, crazed fandom culture now. Like,
they're not sabotaging their own... One, their own movie, and two, why would that's just oh my gosh, okay.
But that's where we are. If you want to go down Reddit
territory, right?
Yeah, you're going to be down the Reddit rabbit hole in Wonderland, my friend. but yeah, we're not going to go too deep on all that because that's crazy. But yeah,
it's real.
I think there will be in the end. I will just say, I think Rise of Skywalker is going to be a lot messier when all the media, you know, when they drop that curtain to keep everything looking nice for premieres and. In box office tallies, I think there's going to be a story here, and I'm kind of interested to see what it is because it seems like the cast, more so than most movie cast I've ever seen, like I feel like they got screwed in this movie and they just like are not happy about it.
But what's crazy is I feel like I want someone to do what they did for Obama, like at the beginning of his presidency and at the end where they would show pictures of him coming in the office and then like the gray coming in at the end. I want someone to do that to the cast of Star Wars. So I want them to show like the first image, the first interview they did where they're all smiling and they're all golden. And then the very last one they ever do for this. And I want to see the comparison because that's going to be something else.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. The interviews are pretty funny. I mean, everybody just has like a moment, like even Domhnall Gleeson has the one where the person's like, this will be great for the DVD extras, and he's just like going off. He's like, because that's what the kids are like in these days. That's what we do it for, those DVD extras.
I mean, to me, Ridley has been the one to keep herself the most out of the muck.
Like, yes. Well, I mean, because she's just straight up not have it. She knows how to pull out that British lady thing.
Yeah, she's done the best job.
She's just like,
because Finn can't stop. Like Finn,
okay,
no, boy, yeah, can't stop talking.
Is there someone from this group who we think is going to inevitably end up like Hayden Christensen and just fade away from public eye after all this?
No, all these people still have too much career trajectory. I mean, Kelly Marie Tran would be the only person I would see,
and I don't think people will let her. faith.
No, I mean, I think there's a whole, such she's a got movement. A whole yep. movement behind her yeah, championing her, just true. Like Ryan
Definitely
Johnson.
Definitely won't be Oscar Isaac.
No, yeah. And I don't think, like, I don't think it'll be
I
Ridley.
Think Oscar Isaac will go back to making real indie, like, prestige things.
I think Boyega will get some other role that will just, like, you know, will cement him in that. I think he needs that, because, you know, like, he tried Pacific Rim, and that didn't end up being, like, the franchise
Yeah, I think he's learning,
starter.
Like, attack the block is more his niche. Like,
but, yeah, I don't really see that happening, you know, for these guys.
No. I think, I mean, they're all too, I mean, the game is so much different now, and like, yeah. they're all
and
like,
it's not going to happen for
you
Adam Driver.
You got to be a quadruple. yeah. And I think Adam Driver's done with any kind of big budget franchise ever. I think he's learned where he
found
belongs.
That,
Marriage Story.
Yeah,
not,
he found
this
that niche,
be,
man.
This couldn't be more clear for him. It's Marriage Story, not Star Wars. Like, yeah. that's what he needs to do with his career. And yeah, because he's faded away long before for JJ. I mean, he hasn't even done anything. He has not said a word about this film or anything. So, you know, I don't know. But I'm sure you guys have thoughts about The Rise of Skywalker. Please let us know at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, because as we said, this conversation is still ongoing, but we got to move on. So we're going to take a break, but when we get back, we are going to discuss the trailer for A Quiet Place 2 and jump talk about The Witcher, plus what we're looking forward to in 2020.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
All right, so we're not going to spend too much time because we spent a lot of time just talking about Rise of Skywalker, but a Quiet Place 2 trailer came out, started off the year as a nice kind of Happy New Year present to us film fans. And if you saw it, I like this trailer.
It's a very loud trailer.
Oh, it's surprisingly loud. It kind of takes away which is a nice play on things. Basically, what the trailer is it takes a note out of It 2's playbook and some other horror things, where the trend is kind of coming back now to show an entire clip of a scene.
Yeah.
Instead of just like a random trailer setting up something bad happening and then flashes of stuff. So the scene we get is actually like kind of a very much a World War Z type thing, where we flash back to when the world fell apart with these sound monsters invading. And it's Emily Blunt's character and the kids driving in a car when they're going down like Main Street of their town when all of this starts happening. And it is pretty good. Like Jim said, it's very loud. I mean, chaotic. If you saw the first episode of Watchmen, that was a real, you know, massacre. But this is.
Yeah.
One with monsters, and it's shot really well and creepy. John Krasinski shows off, like, you know, he has some camera skills. Like, there are a lot of great shots. The bus, my favorite was like,
that's
the car
awesome.
Is coming up the street, and then they see a bus just barreling towards them. So Emily Blunt like hits the reverse and is trying to speed back out of there.
And it gets so the way it's just the speed, like the sense of speed there had me like, oh my God, it's gonna get
it rides the edge
all the way out of that clip, and I'm like, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and the best part is as soon as the bus gets like right up in their face, you're worried about like the bus running them over with a panic driver, but out of the front of the bus you just see it comes crawling one of those creatures, and you're just like, oh my God. Like, and there's even like a John Krasinski cameo thing, like, that was dead, and they just like passed him on the street. But like, yeah. And then it cuts to more of the story of the new film in the present, with them basically like picking up and leaving the scene of the first film and trying to walk out and find other towns and civilizations. And they come with Cillian Murphy's character they run into, who looks like he's been through some stuff and is broken, and may kind of play that Tim Robbins role in War of the Worlds, where somebody you like ally with, you think is good, but slowly but surely starts to reveal he's nuts. I mean, I feel like somebody saw Cillian Murphy in Dunkirk and would be like, that would be great. And so we don't know how that's going to go. But the whole dread of it now that I like is not just the monsters, but the fact that this family is going out into this very even bigger, more perilous world, carrying this more dangerous MacGuffin, which is a baby in a box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we like boxing babies.
Well, but I also...
And, well, I'm just saying, in that... They're carrying this like all important piece of knowledge with them
mm-hmm.
that we know from the first film, which is how you can actually kill these monsters that they got to effectively get out and spread before they can get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, I also like the fact that, you know, where in the first movie, the threat was just very much the monsters, right? And staying alive, where now it seems like the monsters are just dressing, really, window dressing, and the real threat are going to be probably... bad humans.
Yeah.
I like the flip on that.
Not even bad humans, just people who are just like, who this broke, like messed
yeah.
them
yeah.
up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, what is it? All the people that worth saving aren't here. So like, there's yeah. some mm-hmm. part of that tagline. So I got very much like the first one. I agree. It had a lot more.
It was much more of a monster movie.
Yeah, it really was. And this one, I get very much like Last of Us vibes,
mm-hmm.
Where it's just like these people, like especially, I mean, I know there's only so much you can do with a post-apocalyptic city setting, but it very much as they're like walking through and they're meeting somebody in it. And that game is all about really just meeting the people and the dysfunctional people that are still around, because it takes a certain kind of crazy eccentric to make it this far for the most part, you know, and they were a little different because they were all together.
Yeah, you either had to be like very either conspiracy theory or violent beforehand, like prisoners, nut yeah. jobs, or something like, you know, you
part
you,
of a group where you could yeah. survive
or something
together.
Broke inside you and you yeah. snapped and you had to do something and you became that person who like Carol, like you were
if you're by yourself
stuff.
Here there's a disturbing reason as yeah. to why. And so, I mean, I very much like that vibe.
Yeah. So I think Quiet Place 2 Part 2 is looking pretty good in one of our most anticipated horror films of this year. And could be the rare sequel that really either matches up to or outdoes the original. So definitely looking forward to
that. I also think
that.
Jim mentioned it where like just the fact that they show so much of the monsters mm-hmm. in this one. I kind of dig that. You know, yeah. I'm typically of the Cloverfield school. Like I like to see glimpses, but I don't like to see the yeah. whole thing.
Here's the thing. I think showing the monsters in this trailer, if there's anyone who is like, oh, I keep hearing about A Quiet Place, the first movie, seeing this trailer, I think will make them go want to see the first
yeah.
one.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. So now it's time for our deep dive segment. And today we are going to be talking full spoilers for The Witcher. So toss a coin to anybody who hasn't seen it and tell them to go get themselves a lollipop or something, because we're going to be talking full spoilers about The Witcher. All right. So The Witcher. You know, we're not going to go over the general plot, because if you guys want to hear that, you can hear our official review Matt and Roland did. It tells you kind of what the premise of the series is. And what the episodes kind of play like without spoilers. The thing we're going to talk about here is kind of the pros and cons and just the experience of watching The Witcher and what people have been kind of giving us some feedback. So The Witcher has, like I said, become, I mean, the measure of any of these streaming shows is what kind of buzz they can generate online. And it seems like The Witcher scored and done well. The Bard character, the song, the music from this show is becoming a hit. Toss a coin to your Witcher is a bona fide hit.
Yeah. Even though the soundtrack's somehow not out. Come on, Netflix. Get on your game.
Henry Cavill's performance as Geralt of Rivera. Is that it? Rivera?
Geralt of Rivia.
Geralt of Rivia. I got none of that right. All right. But his Geralt of Rivia.
Did you watch the show?
Dude, I binged it. I binged it sitting in the office trying to get everything done with Star Wars before we went on break. And like, that's Props. How I did it. So I have Props. To see it again.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
That's how I did a lot of the
I was happy that I mean, that's how I did The Mandalorian.
It was on my
too.
Screen. And
exactly.
Like, yeah,
I had to come in here every Friday, and the first thing I had to do was put it on. So I'm Respect. Actually saving it up in the actual marathon rewatch of The Mandalorian, no too, so it. I can actually watch it fully.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I was amazed I was able to gather all the timeline stuff from how I was watching that show. But that's what we're here to talk about. So Henry Cavill's performance has, I mean, become meme-worthy up and down the internet, quotables everywhere. Other characters and things like what's her name, the crooked Batgirl.
Yennefer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the stuff that they've all said, like they're all kind of bona fide hits. So the thing to talk about The Witcher is, first, there are a couple subjects I marked down. Number one, the pilot. This show is like the best show with one of the worst pilots I've seen. I've had to actively campaign, and I know I'm not alone. A lot of people have do this who had friends, family who started and were like, I got halfway through the first episode, I'm out. Yeah. Like, it's not, and I'm like, the thing I tell people is,
I was about to drop out in the middle of the second episode.
But I was like, you got to at least make it to the end of episode one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when you get to the end of episode one, that fight sequence lets you know, like, yeah. Okay. And like my older brother was like, yeah, I got to that. And I was like, all right, here we go. Episode two. And I was like, yeah. And you understand, like, this is why, what's his name?
Geralt.
I can't stand the Game of Thrones things. Like, where the G's don't mean what they mean in the real world. Okay. So Geralt, like, when he just demolishes a group of human, you know, people who are trying to jump him, you like, I mean, it makes sense why there isn't more action, because with From Him is this dude is.
Yeah.
Is a master. Like, he can annihilate people. And the whole point is he doesn't want to be seen as a monster. So he's trying not to do that. But yeah, anytime there's a fight sequence with Geralt, like, it's pretty awesome in the show. Mm-hmm. And there are several really great fight sequences in the show.
That one at six is amazing.
Which one is that? With
that's
the dragon?
The dragon.
Yeah. I love the one with the dragon.
Because you actually get to see him and Yennefer together.
Yeah, Yennefer, those two like African chicks who are not African in the show. But
the
like,
only thing missing was the dwarves.
Yeah.
Like, those guys not being a part of it were like,
but that was kind of funny to me, where they were just like all frozen on the path. Yennefer like freezes them and they're just like standing there like, what's going on? And the bard's like running around when he wakes up finally. And he's like, oh my God.
Yaskier is amazing.
But yeah, he's just a meme machine himself, like, and that guy in the actor's performance. So the thing you got to do is like push people through like the first episode, maybe two, to get there. And the second thing is you got to kind of warn them about the timeline, because this is the biggest hang up people seem to have with The Witcher who actually get into the show. For inexplicable reasons that I'm sure Matt, who has experienced the games and the books a little more, knows, you're watching three different storylines for three different characters, and they're occurring in three different kind of times. Mm-hmm. And the show does not in any way indicate that to you. There is no like establishing like this year.
Yeah.
Or this place even, like, or like that.
Yeah.
You kind of just go, and it's not a deal breaker, because a lot of the episodes are structured as their own self-contained, like, little storylines, almost like mini movies that you can watch through, and all you got to care about is the actual episode, the arc of that individual episode. So it doesn't kill your experience. But what happens in the pilot is the fall of Citra happens, which is a major battle sequence. People die left and right and all that. And then they start showing back up in the show later on in episodes. Yeah. And the first time that happens, it's so disconcerting, because especially the queen, the lion, and that was my through line. I just attached to her. And I was like, okay, she's alive, like, we're back in this time period. Anytime I don't see her and I know she's dead, or they mention she's dead, we're later on.
Yeah.
Like, and now it's how I just kept it grounded. I made it as simple as that for myself.
Yep.
And that was that was surprisingly effective.
That was the perfect way to do it.
Yeah. I didn't try to get into Yennefer or the sorcerers or when that was happening, because all that, I was like, she had a crooked back, now she's hot. That's all I need to know. Like, that's it. And eventually her and Geralt have some history, and we see that history, and we get to get that. But yeah, you got to warn them that like time is not linear here. This is not just a straight start at the beginning, going to the end. Like, all these things are happening because they converge. And the show thinks it's very clever in the way that it does that, with the logos in the beginning and then like the final episode, all the different logos you've been watching, like, finally coalesce into the full on logo of The Witcher.
Oh, that's clever.
I was like, oh yeah, you're so clever.
That was clever, because I didn't
know people
are
going to understand that.
I didn't notice that at all, and I was like, oh, that's what. It still doesn't help you understand the timeline.
No, exactly.
At all.
I was like, you're so clever. You're so freaking clever. Yeah. Like,
but it looked awesome.
Yeah, it looked awesome.
Props.
And I'm sure the show seemed very, very, very satisfied with itself when it did. It was like, ah, you see what we did there?
Yeah.
And I was like, I did. I don't know how many other people will, but I did. But yeah, so when it all does come together, it does make sense, because once you begin to understand things like the rule of surprise and their whole, and how this show treats the fact that these characters, and I almost wish this was a little more pronounced, they could have beat you over the head with it, that like destiny is like a real guiding principle to these people.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a serious thing, like, and messing with destiny, karma, whatever you want to have it, is like a serious consideration in their world. Yeah. And I think they could have beat you over the head a little bit more about that in the beginning, because they kind of mention it in the conversations Geralt's having, especially with that former princess.
Renfrey.
Yeah, Renfrey, and how she talks about her fate and all that stuff. Mm. But it becomes such an important part of the show. I wish they had just spelled that out a little more. Because when you do see, you know, Geralt kind of fighting Destiny.
You got it.
Fighting Destiny and then eventually having to meet up with the girl in the woods and all that. It is pretty awesome setup for season two. So I think you just got to push the people that you know through those two things that you got to get through some of the setup episodes. I mean, the Fall of Citra is exciting, so I don't know why people are complaining about that. It's because they don't attach to the characters.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the downfall. You see all these people die and you don't know them. Mm-hmm. I had somebody, one of my more cynical friends, say that. Like, I see all these people dying and killing themselves. And I don't care. Who the F is that? Yeah. Like, I don't know you. And I'm like, oh, man, okay.
Yeah.
But it does become more powerful later. I understand the payoff because when you think back to that scene later on and you're more attached and woven into this, you're like, oh, wow, that was like a pretty messed up ending for these characters and Destiny and all that stuff.
Especially for characters like Mousesack and King East. You know, those guys really, like, you get the benefit. And I think it's episode four. I think it's episode four when you see the sequence where Geralt's there. And they're meeting, you know, for the first time and the thing. And then you're really starting to get attached to them. I didn't have my thing was, I think it was in the first thing in our review when we talked about it, that like the episode, the pilot's a little slow to begin with. I liked it a lot, but my main issue, cause I had a couple calls midway through, right? Of, okay, what the hell's happening with, why is this person alive? Like I had multiple calls or texts that said, okay, I don't understand. Is this something? And I was like, no, just keep, like, it's you also, have to watch.
It's weird, too, when you have
a show.
Well,
the first thing I did was go to check and see if I missed an episode.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, you have a show like Watchmen that played with timelines incredibly well that, like, for me, coming from that to this, I was like, whoa, hold on a second. But I have a question. I have a question for you, though. A lot of people, you know, even before this show was to come out, everyone's like, oh my God, it's going to be like a new Game of Thrones. This show is not Game of Thrones.
No.
It's only Game of Thrones in the sense that it is a fantasy type show that has a lot of moving parts to it.
Well, also, and that the pilot's trash.
Yeah, sure.
But I wouldn't go trash.
I'm being flippant, but like Game of Thrones, people now it's such a phenomenon, but if you go back and watch Game of Thrones pilot episode, it's incredibly slow.
Yeah.
Like, nothing happens in that except people walking around Winterfell talking.
Yeah.
Like, and a creepy incest scene at the end.
Yeah.
A kid getting pushed out the window.
But it's because it has the cachet now because they built on that. Well,
do you think The Witcher could grow to be that? Or will The Witcher just continue to be its own thing and it's not the thing
Game of Thrones fans were looking for? I think this is uniquely its own bird. Yeah. And I think, for better or worse, and so far seems like better, that it's its own bird. Like, some people are never going to get into this show.
Mm-hmm. But there's that's okay.
There's too much heavy fantasy, and we've only scratched the surface.
Yeah. Well, and that was one of the biggest things. I remember, like, I think it was after the first trailer, and I think it was Brandon who, like, popped up and was like, well, is this going to be the next Game of Thrones? And even I find it personally funny that, like, we've seen reactions from, like, Freya Allen, who plays Ciri, Lauren Hisrick, the showrunner, and Anya Shalhotra, who plays Yennefer, right? We've seen reactions to the constant Stark references, are you going to be the new Arya? Are you going to be the new, like, this? And there's always this Game of Thrones thing, and their reactions are hilarious. It's very Oscar Isaac Star Wars reactions of, like, a roll of the eyes, a sigh. Like, there is that thing because I get it. Recency bias is, oh, that's the newest thing. And when Game of Thrones was coming out, everyone compared it to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Because that was the hotness at the time. And for some reason, you can only do one fantasy genre show at a time.
That's all people can do.
So, like, that was my biggest thing of these worlds, just in book form, are just really different. And I think what the first episode actually does is display that. I think one of the things the pilot gets right is that's the book. As far as the tone, it's this gruff, curmudgeonly dude making his way, who has a lot more humanity than he lets on, because that they perpetuate the myth that they are feelingless and have no emotions, just so that they don't have to barter as much and deal with as much. That's why.
But at the same time, you got to remember there are going to be so many people coming to this.
But my point is that first pilot exhibits that perfectly. If I were to describe The Witcher as far as, here's the tone and here's the feeling of this world and here are the main characters, that pilot does the exact job I wanted to. That's all. It's so different from a Game of Thrones pilot. And that's good because they're not the same. They're not the same.
But it's also a bad pilot.
I don't think it's a bad pilot.
I think it's a very necessary pilot. I think they bet heavily on the twist of the format of the timelines. And so they bet heavily on the binge model and people having to automatically sail through the pilot and to kind of build on what it does, which, I mean, that was a risky gamble. And I think it's just that fact of word of mouth of enough passionate fans who keep saying, keep going, keep going, keep going, has saved that because.
And I think a lot of people understand who, because this does have a lot of book readers. I think a lot of people understand why it was done. And I think they're willing to kind of give it a pass because like, okay, we're past it because that character, if we're following the book's timeline, Ciri's not in the show in the entirety of season one.
Yeah.
We don't meet her. She's at the time's 11. So like, there's no way to sync up a 100-year-old Geralt, a 70-year-old Yennefer, and a Ciri that is older that, you know, fans are going to care about as a character without doing some weird stuff with the timeline. My big thing is just do a better job of illustrating, hey, here's where we are. And because the show does not do that at all.
Yeah. I mean, even if you had done like different filters for like different times.
Just give me a 30 years later or 20 years or like a year or whatever.
If it was way in the past, like more drab, colorless filter.
Just something that's overt. Yeah. But yeah, I agree.
Can we talk about the format argument real quick? Or
we got a little bit of time before we got to move on.
So the big question that a lot of people were saying, and it's in sort of real stark contrast to the Mandalorian. Mandalorian was coming out weekly, Witcher we got in a binge, and there are people saying, "Well, you know, I like weekly better." Charlie. People, I like binge better.
Charlie Brandon Rockies, Ben Kendrick.
Well, I mean, look, I am a person who I like the weekly. I like the weekly model. But my caveat there is the show has to be made for that format.
Yeah.
And if someone is going in creating a show knowing it's going to be a binge show, then different decisions have to get made as far as episode cadence and story beats and things like that. Whereas like, if you're doing something on a weekly basis, like, you know, your show can basically live or die by, you know, the cliffhanger or, you know, big reveals and things like that. And so while both have their merits, The Witcher in its current form would no way be a good weekly show.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Jim, because I'm writing an article about that. Yeah.
I've done this since the binge model started like 10 years ago. And I mean, I always argue that there is no one format. And every time we start arguing that, it's very disingenuous. I even went, we had this out on Twitter, all of us. Right. And I even pointed out at one point, like,
Kofi caught me with The Boys because I thought The Boys was weekly.
Well, Charlie said that too. And I'm like, The Boys
is a binge.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I ended up watching The Boys basically
Stranger
weekly.
Things is a binge. Like, yeah. There's a lot of.
I don't like Stranger Things.
Here's the bottom line that I put to it. Like, there are two types of streaming shows that are created. Mm-hmm. One is long form movies, Stranger Things. And the Duffer Brothers say, like, Stranger Things isn't a series. It's a movie.
Yeah.
That's why they call it Stranger Things 1, 2, and 3. So it's just one long movie, like broken up, and they do the episode things just to space it out for you. But that's why binging Stranger Things doesn't feel bad, and why it's caught on and it retains its relevance because it's made for that format. It's a long movie, so you binge it. The Mandalorian, which, by the way, everybody started this whole conversation because The Mandalorian.
Yeah, I know.
Like, weekly's better. There it is. You see The Mandalorian. That was the only really majorly successful mainstream success streaming show of the year, like, was the only one that was weekly. Everything else, Haunting of Hill House, Stranger Things 3, The Boys, all of that was binge.
Yeah.
So, and all of that was successful, but okay.
And also, you know, Disney's other weekly shows on there, you don't even talk about
that are also weekly. They have six other shows that release and no one cares.
No.
But Mandalorian has it, and all of a sudden we got to paint everything with the same brush.
No, anyway. Yeah, exactly. So, we're not in on this argument. We got to move on. But like, yeah, I think it, like I said, so it depends if you're making an actual TV show, like The Mandalorian is a TV show.
Yes.
So yeah, that makes sense weekly. And it worked very well weekly because like you said, because it's a TV show, they pace it, they build it in, there's reveals. They reveal Baby Yoda at the end of episode one, and then we talk about it for a week.
Yeah.
And then we come back and we see it and then, you know, all that. But even so, people are all now glossing over the fact that half the people who are saying everything should be weekly started were the same ones also complaining The Mandalorian wasn't moving fast enough. There wasn't enough stuff happening in this show, like,
and also
by episode 4 and 5.
If you read stuff now, it's, oh, hey, we're unsubscribing from Disney Plus now. even though they have the weekly show. Like, yeah, all exactly. The same problems also, but I will say Jim is right.
They're unsubscribing because of Mandalorian.
What I will say, Jim is right in the regard to me that if you put the way The Witcher is currently formatted into that weekly thing, I don't think, and that's actually the premise of the article, is essentially like, I think binging helps The Witcher because the timeline issues would be a consistent negative every week until 6-7 weeks later when they all start to coalesce out. And then people are like, oh, hey, it's decent now. Well, the narrative is totally different.
It works for The Watchmen, though.
No, The Watchmen would not have the same amount of people don't like the timeline as opposed to Watchmen. It's just something that happens. There was not a lot of outright negativity on the Watchmen's timelines.
Well, because they did it.
Well. I'm saying here, the way it is structured, there is that, okay, well, we don't like it right now, but it wins a lot of people over as they watch the whole thing. I don't think it has that narrative.
Because the Watchmen built intrigue around.
But I'm saying, I'm not debating approach. Yeah. Filmmaker or the series maker. What I'm saying is, as it is currently constructed,
Then yes,
it
and
does not
work. The timelines were kind of a reveal, and not opposed to like the main actual format of the show.
Sure.
The main action of the show was linear. It was taking place in modern day Oklahoma, and this is what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
The divergences and flashbacks and stuff that were built into it were surprises and novelties, but they weren't the main format of the show.
Right.
We got to move on, but let us know what you guys think about The Witcher. I mean, just to conclude, I think that if people weren't able to just push ahead without asking questions a little bit faster with this show, it would fall apart. But that's just me. But let us know what you guys think. Hashtag Comic Nation. Now we have like no time left, but we are going to go through 2020. We all wrote down some things we're excited about in 2020 and wanted to share with you guys. So we're going to make this a little more truncated than it was. But we'll go through and everybody will tell you a little bit about what they're looking forward to. Me personally, I wrote down what I'm looking forward to in 2020 the most is I'm looking forward to the Marvel shows on Disney Plus finally becoming a thing. Falcon and Winter Soldier, and now WandaVision got moved up. So we're getting WandaVision this year. And I'm really looking forward to that because after seeing The Mandalorian and like what it did for Star Wars live action TV series, something I've been waiting decades for, and how that played out, I am so thrilled to see how the MCU gets more depth and exploration and
in a way excitement. That we never got from Marvel Television.
Yeah, exactly. In a way that we never got from Marvel Television, because this will be the first time that like the promise of the true multi-platform interconnected MCU is realized. And I like all the subjects. I'm really excited to see the kind of espionage action of Winter Soldier and Falcon. And I'm kind of really, and I still think WandaVision will be the sleeper hit like that.
Agreed.
It's going to be something very unique, but open up something really big that gets Marvel fans super duper jazzed going into 2021. So I'm really looking forward to those. For movie, I put on Chris Nolan's Tenet. I didn't want to do it, but I looked through movies coming out this year and
it's a little sparse,
thought it was.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we did reach, as somebody I saw an article, peak geekdom. I mean, we had Avengers Endgame and that whole saga that we've been on for 10 years. Star Wars is ending like a 30-plus year trip we've been on. And now it's just kind of like, what's next?
Yeah, I was going to say, then throw a Game of Thrones in there. Like, yeah, you pretty much, it's a reset year.
Yeah, and a reset year, and a very pivotal reset year where we're figuring out which one of those futures we're going to end up in, like a Star Trek-type future or one of those many dystopian futures that we've seen in movies and TV shows. So we're all kind of waiting on that. And there's a certain amount of anxiety in that. And like, the movies are kind of sparse this year. It's not as exciting as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-mm.
But one that does stand out is Chris Nolan's Tenet, which is kind of his like next Inception from the looks of it, with Don David Washington. Sorry, flip that around. And this whole kind of gimmick of reversing time at key moments and how that plays. I think Charlie Ridgely, who's not here with us today, basically saw the extended preview in IMAX and said it was crazy. The action's going to be crazy. The kind of sci-fi gimmick on top of that's going to be crazy. So I'm really looking forward. I hope we get back to kind of classic Nolan. Before we went on these divergences with Interstellar or even Dunkirk, which I love, but I love the sci-fi action like Nolan movie.
Yeah, I like when Nolan makes you think.
Yeah, exactly.
Agree.
And let's be honest, as people who do this for a living, we could use another Inception. I made big bank off Inception. So I'm looking forward to a movie that people have theories on and want to read about and Andy explains. And this is perfect timing. Thank you, Mr. Nolan. All right. So that's Tenet. And of course, I can't get out of here without saying I got to rep the beginning of MCU Phase 4 happens this year, where we begin to answer the question, can Marvel make lightning strike twice? The Infinity Saga is over. A lot of big stars have left. A lot of big characters are done for. And the main Avengers run. Like, Thor is pretty much about to be holding this whole thing down himself. And will these new crop of movies, because it's been kind of tepid so far. People are excited, but it's not the same level of excitement, right?
I was amazed there was one of these on your list.
Well, but I think a lot of it goes hand in hand with...
I know what Matt's throwing shade about. So, of course, the two movies we get this year are Black Widow, which he's not surprised. I'm psyched out. But Eternals is the other one. And I have been somewhat critical or skeptical of Eternals, to put it mildly. And I still am, but I'm excited to see...
I want that movie this to be good.
I started my career because of these Marvel movies. Like, I've made no secret of that. And so, like, when I started doing this was right after Iron Man and Incredible Hulk, and, like, at the tail end of Incredible Hulk is when I started writing my first articles. And the whole thing about who will they find for Thor? Who will they find for Captain America? How will this Avengers thing... I remember the excitement of writing all that and the uncertainty, and it was very exciting. So I'm really kind of glad to be back there, as much as I'm scared or nervous about it. And even Eternals is the big one. Black Widow is still something from the old world. Eternals is when we truly step out into, can we go full Marvel? Full Marvel and have the public respond. And I'm excited to see that. So that's me in 2020.
Yes. Jim says yes, right?
I hope so.
We're happy looking at Camille and Johnny like right now. And
My biggest concern about Eternals is also on my list because I'm a huge Eternals fan to begin with. But my biggest concern about the Eternals is that they're not going to go Kirby enough. That they will find some way and show restraint and won't hit that. And I think that's going to be the inevitable criticism of that movie, is that it may end up being too boring. Because when you look at the Eternals when you look at the human aspects of those Eternals characters, the human characters are boring as hell. The more godlike side of those characters, that's the stuff that's interesting. The stuff that is put at play there with the deviants and all of that, that's what I want to see more of, and I'm just concerned that we won't.
It's so nice to have Eternals fan, like, refreshing. Like, it's refreshing.
I don't think they exist.
Dude, read the first, you're not going to be able to find copies of the first Kirby run. So just get the two trades. Marvel put them out in two trades. They're fantastic.
Jim, do you have anything else for 2020 since we're on you?
The only other thing that was what we talked about before is I'm kind of excited for a bit of a break year in that. I mean, I'm not excited from a traffic standpoint because that's going to suck. But, but really, I mean, like, we got a lot this past year, and I'm really curious to see what the discourse is like with things like the MCU starting, you know, Phase 4, how the Disney Plus shows will start factoring into all of that. You can't forget too, we're going to get HBO Max this year as well. And so I'm curious to see what the future of DC looks like in multimedia, right? Like, DC Universe the shows are a mixed bag. A lot of people like a lot of the stuff. I'm loving Harley Quinn. I love Doom Patrol. I was so on Titans. Stargirl does not excite me even a little bit, but they clearly have shown that they are willing to put the budget up to put these shows together.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that someone will come in creatively,
Arrowverse.
Will come in creatively and put something together on that front. Because if there were ever a year for DC to get their act together, it is this year.
Yeah, this year is the platform. And they have good stuff. Like, Wonder Woman is anchoring the middle of the year.
Birds of Prey will be interesting to see.
Yeah, Birds of Prey, Wonder Woman.
What's their end of year movie? I feel like I'm missing one giant one. Am I missing an end of year DC movie? Or is that it?
So. No, because Batman's 2021.
Yeah, I think it's it.
Okay, wow. Yeah,
so they just have two movies.
Okay.
So that's it. I'm excited to slow down
Wonder
a bit.
Wonder Woman and Birds of Prey. Wow. Then Batman, Suicide Squad next year, and that's then Aquaman and Flash probably 2022.
Yeah. Jeez, so. So no, I'm looking to really enjoy the stuff that comes out this year, because if it's bad, it's going to be a long year.
All right, Matt.
So for me, just off the bat, two TV shows I will look forward to is season 2 of Witcher, because that is probably coming 2020, kind of late 2020. Also, Boys. I am so excited.
It was on my list, but I had to do the Marvel stuff.
Boys, I mean, I adore that show. I cannot wait. And I feel like, you know, there was so much social media stuff of because that kind of came out of left field. Everyone was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just discovered this. And now I have to wait forever. And it was so nice to hear they were already filming. So yeah. It was like, oh, you're already on the men. So I am stoked for that. As far as it's a big, it might be a small movie year, but it's a big game year. Final Fantasy VII Remake is in March.
Oh,
I cannot
yeah.
wait for that game. I've been waiting for that
for a week.
I'm so stoked. Also, Marvel's Avengers comes out in May. I'm excited for that. And Crystal Dynamics, I trust. So I'm hoping they don't let me down. And then Resident Evil 3 also comes out. And all of those are top half of the year. So that's not even like middle to late end of the calendar where typically all the big guns come out. You know, Last of Us 2 is also this coming year. So we got a lot of stuff there. Real quick. Resident Evil 3, Spider-Woman. I had to do a comic Spider-Woman number one. Spider-Woman gets her own series. And then I just want info on Dragon Age 4, and I want info on Beyond Good and Evil 2. I know they won't release.
And Moon Knight, because this year we will get our Moon Knight casting.
But okay, casting, yes.
Yeah, I want to know who Mark Spector is going to be, and I am excited for that.
Radcliffe, do you like that?
I don't mind that pick. I think Daniel Radcliffe is not a bad pick.
I don't think he's too big. I don't think he has for Mark Spector. For it.
He hasn't the what?
Physique for it.
He could put it on.
No,
he's a little short though.
Yeah.
He was a little short. So I am excited for that.
He's gonna have to get some of those De Niro platforms that he was sporting in The Irishman.
Because Moon Knight's 2021. Right?
Yep, 2021.
Yeah. So casting, I want to hear news about that. And also, as far as movies, Pixar Soul is one of their kind of new original IPs. That just looks, it's one of those that just has the look of it's gonna be one of those that just like steals my heart. It's
Pixar,
going to be very
Pixar
charming.
I think does terrible teasers or like teaser trailers, but usually shows up when the movie
you didn't
inevitably
like the teaser
comes
for Soul?
Out. No, I didn't like the teaser for Inside Out either, which is very similar to that, or it, really any of the other Pixar movies.
I feel like Onward's going to make the most money. I feel like Soul's going to be my favorite when it comes to those two. Those are the two originals coming down the pikes.
All right, is that it for you?
That's it for me.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning back in with us after this brief holiday hiatus. If you are just getting into the show now, we put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed and get regular updates about new episodes of the show. You can also subscribe on your favorite listening platform. We are on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Google Playlist, or you can find episodes uploaded to YouTube every week on the comicbook.com YouTube page. All right. If you want to continue the discussion with us about anything, hit us up at the hashtag comicbooknation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
At Jim Viscardi.
And if you love the show, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We're going to kick off this new year by next week when Janelle Wheeler's back. We'll probably read through some more reviews from over the holiday season so we could get some late holiday gifts out in the form of t-shirts to everybody who leaves us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if we read it on the show, you get your free shirt. So be sure to get those reviews in. That'll do it for this episode. Thank you for joining us back in 2020. This is Comic Book Nation. We're out.
Deuces.